We are actively finding tenders right now and working with the processors out west to formulate a plan to move all this crab out west.
Tanner crab fishermen consider their options as low prices keep them at the docks. From Alaska Public Media, this is Statewide News on Alaska News Nightly for Monday, January 16th. Good evening, I'm Casey Grove. Also tonight, legislative leaders talk about the big issues ahead on the eve of the session.
Clearly, there's no math model that I've ever seen that shows that we could afford to not change that dividend formula.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Are you an Alaska artist or do you know one? March 1st is the deadline to apply for a Rasmussen Foundation Individual Artist Award. The program provides awards to artists, musicians, performers, writers, and culture bearers. Amounts are increasing. A project award, now $10,000, is available for an Alaska artist at any career stage. Mid-career and established artists may apply for a $25,000 artist fellowship. Learn more at Rasmussen.org. Rasmussen Foundation, promoting a better life for all Alaskans. This message sponsored by Rasmussen Foundation.
Kodiak's Tanner crab fishery opened yesterday, but the fleet is continuing to stand down. As KMXT's Kirsten Dobrath reports, local fishermen and canneries in Kodiak have not come to an agreement on price, and this year's harvest may end up being processed off the island.
Fishermen should have been setting their gear on Sunday morning for the opening of Kodiak's biggest Tanner crab fishery in decades, but the boat harbor was almost full. Dozens of vessels were stacked high with empty crab pots. At the coffee shop downtown right near the docks, fishermen lined up for free coffee instead. Frank Miles owns the fishing vessel Sumner Strait and has fished commercially for nearly 50 years. His first Tanner season around Kodiak was in the early 80s when he chopped bait for a local boat.
I've parlayed it into a very good livelihood. I've raised three kids in this town on the back of fishing income, and it's been a beautiful thing.
Miles normally fishes pot cod and long lines for halibut and black cod. He also tenders salmon. He sat out the beginning of this cod season so he could go out for tanners instead. He didn't think prices would be quite as high as last year's record of more than $8 per pound.
But I never in my wildest dreams thought we were going to get offered $2.50. It really is a slap in the face.
That's how much all of Kodiak's processors offered ahead of the scheduled opener for the Tanner crab fishery. Miles says he understands that processors' expenses have gone up, but so have his. Fuel and bait costs have increased, it's more expensive to replace or repair crab pots, and he's losing money staying tied up. Kodiak's entire fleet sat out the season opener on Sunday, and they aren't planning on fishing anytime soon. That includes fishermen in Shignik and the South Peninsula.
Nobody's pulling any pots, as far as we know.
Kevin Abina is the secretary and treasurer for the Kodiak Crab Alliance Cooperative, which represents about 120 permit holders in the fishery. He says they're still negotiating with the canneries in town, but so far the best offers are coming from processors out the Aleutian chain.
We are actively finding tenders right now and working with the processors out west to formulate a plan to move all this crab out west.
As of Monday, that decision wasn't final, but it's a serious option. Canneries to the west are currently offering close to $4 per pound for Bering Sea tanners, but Kodiak tanner crabs are about an inch bigger. That's another sticking point for local fishermen who say the crab around Kodiak is more valuable than what's currently on the market. Abina says both the community and fishermen from other parts of the state have reached out to express their support for the stand down. At this point, he says the soonest the fleet would go fishing is Wednesday.
The amount that we stand to gain, everybody understands it is much greater than what we're losing right now for standing down for a day, a two, three, four, a week, whatever it takes.
Fisherman Frank Miles says whenever they get a fair deal, he'll be ready.
I can't wait to go fishing, man. I think everybody's ready to go. I've never seen a fleet so ready.
In the meantime, he and the others will continue to wait. In Kodiak, I'm Kirsten Dobrath.
For almost 20 years, Senator Bert Stedman has represented much of Southeast Alaska in the state legislature. District A includes the communities of Ketchikan, Wrangell, Petersburg, and Sitka, and several smaller towns in between. The next legislative session begins tomorrow, and for the 11th year, Stedman will co-chair the Senate Finance Committee. That means he'll oversee efforts to create a multi-billion-dollar operating budget. There's a lot on the table. One recurring issue is the Alaska Permanent Fund. Stedman told Coast Alaska's Angela Denning that the state needs to balance its long-term fiscal health against its ability to pay large permanent fund dividends.
Well, it's not the individual dividend that creates the problem. It's when you combine everybody's dividend together, we don't have the cash. So we're going to talk about that and try to come up with how we can rewrite the formula and make some adjustments and see how that goes. But clearly, there's no math model that I've ever seen that shows that we could afford to not change that dividend formula.
So what I'm hearing is that maybe instead of looking for new revenue and more money, maybe looking at what the state is already getting now.
Well, there is support by some legislators to impose income tax or sales tax across the state and pay it out as dividends. But you're just taking it from people that are working and spreading it out. That doesn't make any sense. I think it's unlikely we're going to pass a statewide tax, an income tax or a sales tax.
Well, one of the big budget items for the operating budget that you see is for the Alaska Marine Highway System. You know, Southeast and other coastal areas have not been satisfied with the lack of ferry service in recent years. I'm wondering what the legislature can do about that. What are your thoughts? Because Governor Dunleavy's administration has vetoed millions in ferry funding in his first 4 years in office. So he's going to be around for another 4 years. What would you like to see this year?
Well, let's not forget that the legislature is the appropriators. But the governor has a line item veto on appropriations, and it's the strongest veto protection of any governor in the country. It takes 3/4 vote in the legislature to overturn an appropriation veto. So unless you can overturn his veto, which is unlikely, he could set that level of funding to, frankly, any level he wants. He has a very strong hand in some of the budget negotiations that take place. So I'll work with the governor to try to restructure the marine highway the best we can from, you know, our position on the coast. But not all legislators are supportive of the marine highway. And there's fewer and fewer of us on the coast relative to the rail belt. So it is a challenge. On the positive side, you know, we've got some federal funding that Lisa Murkowski structured in an appropriation bill here several months ago. And there's $200 million a year for ferry systems. But we're not the only one that qualifies, the state. So we're still sorting through that to figure out how much the state's going to actually get, when it's going to arrive, and then how to split it between operating costs and capital costs. So that's a positive. But my goal is to make sure the Marine Highway still is in existence 4 years from now.
That was Senator Bert Stedman, who represents much of Southeast in the state legislature. He was speaking with Coast Alaska's Angela Denning, and of course, the next legislative session begins tomorrow. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, a Homer woman survives an ice skating mishap that features an unusual rescue tool.
Instead of finding thin ice, which probably would have been okay, I found like an open hole of water.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Alaska Pacific University offers degree programs with life-friendly, flexible scheduling and course delivery options grounded in real-life experience. Alaska Pacific University offers innovative programming in nursing, counseling psychology, outdoor and environmental public health, and more. Financial aid is available. Advance your career with APU today. Learn more and apply now at alaskapacific.edu. This message sponsored by Alaska Pacific University.
The Fairbanks City Council has approved a resolution supporting Kinross Fort Knox development of the Manh Cho mine and expressing hope for an alternative to trucking ore from the mine at Tetlin to the Fort Knox Mill north of Fairbanks on public roads. KUAC's Dan Bross reports.
The resolution approved at a January 9th City Council meeting is a substitute for one brought forward by former council member Valerie Therrien last year. Councilmember Jerry Cleworth's rewrite removes specifics about the Manh Cho mine ore trucking plan and impacts to roads, safety, and air quality. While the original resolution was focused on opposition to the ore trucking plan, the substitute voices support for the mine and hope that alternatives can be found to the, quote, problematic ore hauling plan. The resolution suggests construction of a processing mill closer to Tetlin, restricting ore hauling to evening hours or, quote, any other methodologies that may prove feasible. Passage of the resolution followed a lot of public testimony, the vast majority of which expressed concern about the trucking plan. Cleworth said the language of the resolution reflects what he's largely heard from the community.
Everyone has said they support the project, but many people do not support the methodology.
Councilmember John Ringstad said ore transport alternatives like building a railroad or a haul road are economically unviable.
If we're to a choice of saying you truck it or you don't do the project, you know, I want this thing to go forward.
The council approved the resolution 4-2 with members Sue Sprinkle and June Rogers casting the no votes. Rogers said the resolution needed more work, and Sprinkle clarified that her concern is with the ore haul plan.
I don't mind mining. I don't hate mining. I get it. But the trucking.
The hauling of ore and other freight on public roads is allowed as long as the vehicles and loads are within specifications. Kinross Fort Knox and the group Advocates for Safe Alaska Highways are supporters of KUAC. In Fairbanks, I'm Dan Bross.
When Homer resident Kelsey Haas fell into an open patch of icy water earlier this winter, she didn't panic. It was her first time falling through the ice, but as a guide and avid adventurer, Haas knew a few techniques to get out of the water safely. However, as KBBI's Desiree Hagen reports, Haas did not quite expect the key role a dead snowshoe hare would play.
Kelsey Haas was skating to Gruen Glacier in late November with a group of about a dozen people, whom she describes as experienced adventurers.
We had all of the rescue gear. We had the throw ropes. We had ice screws. We were testing the thickness of the ice as we went.
The glacier Haas and her friend set out for has become a popular destination in Ketchumak Bay State Park, especially in the winter. It's about a two-mile trek, some over a frozen lake, to get to the massive 13-mile-long glacier. The 29-year-old hiking and rafting guide has been there many times before, both in warm and winter months.
I have a lot of experience in really, really cold temperatures. The cold does not really scare me.
Things normally go pretty well, but Haas says she wants to share the story of a trip in November that didn't quite go as planned, to remind people of the risk of skating on thin ice in open water.
So don't do what I did, folks.
Her rescue story, though, is pretty unique and involves a dead snowshoe hare. Haas says she found the carcass on the ice while exploring around the glacier. She thought it was kind of mysterious.
It wasn't warm. It wasn't like super stiff, but it wasn't like, I want this to eat it.
Haas decided to hold on to the carcass. She wanted to take it home to skin it and save the fur. Fast forward to a little later in the day. The sun was about to set and Haas and the rest of her crew discovered an interesting ice formation.
And there's this giant, beautiful iceberg that just had this like perfectly picturesque arch, like right in the middle of the iceberg. And we all knew that it was really thin ice and that it wouldn't be a good idea.
Haas says the arch was too beautiful and tempting and that she wanted to skate through despite the risk.
So definitely not a smart idea. Definitely well aware of that.
In hindsight, she knew that there was a possibility that the ice might be too thin. But if anything did happen, there was a trained group of people who were well-equipped close by who could help if she fell into the icy lake. Plus, Haas had extra warm clothes in her backpack. So she tempted fate and skated through the arch as fast as she could. But
instead of finding thin ice, which probably would have been okay, I found like an open hole of water.
When Haas fell into the water, she says her instinct kicked in. Instantly cold, she knew she needed to turn around the way she had come.
You know that that ice behind you like held your body weight until it didn't. You don't know what the ice in front of you is going to look like.
She says she also knew that she needed to position her body horizontally rather than vertically. This would make it easier to pull herself up and out of the water and onto the solid ice. Haas says the dry bag she carried on her back and the air inside it also acted as a makeshift flotation device. And she still had the snowshoe hair with her.
Don't know how I didn't let that go.
Once Haas reached the ice's edge, she says she slapped the hair on a shelf of ice. The wet hair quickly froze onto the cold surface. Haas says she used the frozen snowshoe hair like an anchor
to kind of pull myself out and over, and crawled myself out, stood up.
Haas says thanks to the hair, she was out of the water before her friends could help with their throw ropes and other rescue equipment in hand.
And I remember I just looked at them and I was like, I just have to like just go. Like I just have to skate as fast as possible and work my body temperature back up. Still holding the snowshoe hair. Still have the snowshoe hair.
Once she made it back to shore, there was a group waiting for her.
It was like a pit crew. Like everyone just swarmed me, took off all my clothes. But I don't really remember like whose clothes I was wearing. I looked like a giant marshmallow.
Haas says one of the biggest struggles was taking her skis off. The laces were frozen solid. She remembers three people on each skate pulling and struggling to remove them. After she was able to get her skates off, she still had a mile and a half hike to the water taxi pickup spot.
My coldest thing was my feet. On the hike back, my feet were definitely pretty numb the whole way.
While Haas says she was able to laugh about the situation immediately afterwards, she says it definitely affected her days later.
When I was trying to sleep, like anytime I closed my eyes, I'd kind of have a flashback and like didn't sleep for a couple days. And that's when I realized like, okay, this was probably more traumatic than I thought at the time.
Haas says the most important thing to be aware of is your personal safety while exploring places like Gruen Glacier.
Even though it's an absolutely gorgeous place and it's an incredible adventure and you're ice skating around icebergs and the glaciers and mountains, it's so, so important to recognize that level of risk. Always have dry clothes, always use a dry bag, have a throw rope, have all the things you need to get people out of that ice. And just do it really safely.
And as for the snowshoe hair that Haas used to pull herself out of the icy water,
I want to make slippers. Definitely want to make slippers out of it.
In Homer, I'm Desiree Hagen.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by
ConocoPhillips, investing in oil exploration and production and working to create economic opportunities for Alaskans. ConocoPhillips, unlocking Alaska's energy resources. It's time to apply for a Rasmussen Foundation Individual Artist Award. Deadline is March 1st. If you've tried before, maybe this year will be your year. Many artists apply multiple times before getting the grant. Use the grant to explore, honor elders and mentors, and contribute to the vibrancy of Alaska communities. The foundation offers workshops to help artists, makers, and culture bearers. More at Rasmussen.org. This message sponsored by Rasmussen.org, promoting a better life for all Alaskans.
An Anchorage man won a $3.5 million jackpot last week, the largest prize ever in a game run by Lotto Alaska. George Tagaruk, a retiree, first won $126,000 in a weekly drawing. Then, on Tuesday, he got a chance to score a bigger prize, choosing a card from a 54-card Chase the Ace board, and he picked right.
Here it is. It is the Ace of Spades. He is our winner, and he has just won $3.5 million.
In the company's Facebook videos, Tagaruk says he almost didn't claim the weekly prize because he wrote down the winning numbers but mixed them up.
Next day when I woke up, it's like I had to check the numbers again. And they're 6655, the last four numbers.
Lotto Alaska launched in 2017, and a portion of the ticket sales go to Alaska nonprofits. Staff member Stash Solsky says the jackpot has been building up week by week since April. He says more and more people are playing, especially now that tickets are sold online.
So the longer we keep going, the more people we reach, and the quicker the jackpots build up.
Tagaruk said the jackpot winning card number he chose on the board, 49, was a product of both the 49th state and a football fan closer to home.
My oldest son, Manning, he's a 49er fanner, you know.
Tagarook said he'll first use some of the winnings to pay down some debts. Just before Martin Luther King Day, Cal Williams likes to share his story with Anchorage school children. He goes to classrooms dressed up as a 1960s civil rights marcher. He sat down with KNBA's Rhonda McBride to talk about those days.
Cal Williams remembers stepping in time to the music as marchers sang songs of hope and determination.
We shall overcome. We shall overcome.
Williams was 22 when Martin Luther King inspired him to take an active role in the civil rights movement.
Oh, deep in my heart.
But his awakening about the importance of this fight for justice came much earlier, at the age of 14.
I was in love at the time and sure that I was going to marry Marilyn Monroe. And all of a sudden we get this story 70 miles from me, my hometown, that a kid had come down from Chicago and was killed because he had whistled at a white lady.
The year was 1955. William says he and Emmett Till were the exact same age when a lynch mob kidnapped Till, tortured him, and dumped his body in a river.
So that did indeed change my concept of who I was. That said to me, I don't think Marilyn Monroe and I are going to get married.
Instead, William's grandmother sent him to a private Catholic school, which had all black students with all white priests and nuns who demanded a lot.
Well, these nuns insisted that we stand and look them in the eye and respond, whereas the status quo down there said, when you talk to a white person, look down, look away, do not make eye contact.
William says his education prepared him to engage with people who were different from him. So when the 1960s rolled around, it seemed natural to fight for change, something his grandfather encouraged him to do, even if it sometimes landed him and other demonstrators in jail.
My grandfather told me when we were involved in the civil rights movement, go on, boy, do what y'all doing, because pretty soon all them old racist people going to die, and ain't going to be no more racism.
William says he's worked most of his life to fulfill his grandfather's dreams, and at the age of 81, they are still far from being realized. But he says a recent visit to a classroom in Mountain View gives him hope.
And there was every race on the planet in this one room. They all laughed at the same joke, and they all knew the same song. While in the office, they had hello in 100 different languages on the wall. That gave me extreme hope. Oh, freedom,
Cal Williams was recently awarded an honorary doctorate at the University of Alaska Anchorage, recognized as a champion for justice and equality. So just call him Dr. Williams, still marching on. In Anchorage, I'm Rhonda McBride.
And before I'll be a slave, I'll be buried in my grave and go home to my Lord and be free.
7 days of singing, feasting, and services culminated on Saturday for members of the Russian Orthodox Church. Their Christmas celebration started on January 7th, the date that follows the Julian calendar. In some communities, the Orthodox Christmas celebration is called Slavi or Slavic. In different parts of Alaska, you can find many variations on a theme for the festivities. Some, like KNBA's Jill Freitas, enjoy them all.
I feel lucky. Lucky that while everyone has one Christmas, I have two. I am Russian Orthodox from St. Paul Island, and I celebrate both holidays. The 25th of December is more traditional for my family. Santa, the colors red and green, and a Christmas story playing 24 hours on TBS. I love this holiday, especially as a child. But there is something so meaningful and special about January 7th, While we still have our decorations and Christmas tree up, Russian Christmas for me is more of a religious experience. Early in the morning, we go to church, where the choir sings beautiful, ethereal songs in Unangam Tenu and Slavonic. Everyone is dressed in their Sunday best. Near the altar, on the floor, there is usually two festively crafted stars made out of cardboard and garland, with Russian Orthodox icons placed throughout, and sometimes they even have working lights. The stars are designed to spin, so when singing the hymns, someone, usually a man, spins the star to the songs. The priest often yells, Christusa Rakoch and Christos Rastayacha, which means Christ is born in Unangam Tenu and Slavonic. Between January 7th and January 10th, starring, or slavy, begins. The priest, along with the choir and whoever else wants to join in, goes from house to house singing Russian Orthodox Christmas songs while spinning the beautiful cardboard star. I had participated in starring several times in my life, but to me it's an entirely different experience having the stars come to your home. As a child growing up, my mom always had hot beverages, freshly made cookies, and fruitcake on the counter waiting for everyone, which is what everyone usually does. The priest and singers come in and go to the living room, and whoever is spinning the star stands beneath your icons that are usually in the corner of the room and faces the singers. For some reason, I feel like my New Year starts the day the stars come to my house. The songs that are sung and the message they bring give me hope. A majority of the songs are sung in either Unangam Tenu or Slavonic, but there are some English versions that say things like, God grant you many years, or God bring peace and health for many, many years. This is my first Christmas season away from home since my children and I moved to Anchorage, and my heart is homesick for what once was. But I'm forever thankful for these traditions, and I intend to pass them on to my children, no matter where we are.
That was KNBA's Jill Freitas sharing memories of Slavi. And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org and wherever you get your podcasts. We had reports tonight from Kirsten Dobrath in Kodiak, Angela Denning in Petersburg, Dan Bross in Fairbanks, Desiree Hagen in Homer, and Chris Clint, Rhonda McBride, and Jill Freitas in Anchorage. If you want to send us a news tip, question, or comment, email us at news@alaskapublic.org. Our audio engineer is Chris Hyde, Annie Feit produced tonight's show, and I'm Casey Grove. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
Alyeska Pipeline Service Company, marking 45 years of commitment to operating the Trans-Alaska Oil Pipeline. Learn more at alyeskapipeline.com.
And by
Northern Air Cargo, providing cargo transportation to 9 Alaska communities. NAC offers options including cargo charters to get freight where it needs to be. Northern Air Cargo, serving Alaska since 1956.
This is Statewide News on Alaska Public Media.